Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I am John Bubb. I am filling in for Andrew Zirin today, who could not be with us. He's doing some stuff in his house. So, you know, he's got the baby. He's got all sorts of stuff that he's dealing with. So it's just me today. And I have a very special guest with us. Yes, we have the one, the only Kermit the Frog with us. Hello, Kermit.
You're a sick person.
No, actually, we have John Prosser from Front Page Tech.
Hi.
How's it going, John?
I'm the generic John. Hi. How long did I take you to come up with?
Oh, about 5 minutes. Oh,
of course. Just the fact that you put effort into it makes me feel special.
You are. You're a very special boy.
I hate you.
So how are you doing today?
I'm good. Busy, but good. How are you?
Not too bad. So it's been kind of an eventful week, at least news-wise. I mean, just normally when we enter this time of the year, you know, November, December, January, or at least up until, you know, CES, there's very little news in technology. Everything just slows down for the holidays. But man, we've had a lot of stuff this week.
Right.
Yeah, so let's go right on into it. Fitbit is reportedly buying Pebble. You know, Pebble, the smartwatch maker, they had the e-ink screen originally, I believe. So according to the information, Fitbit is buying smartwatch maker Pebble for an undisclosed amount of money. But according to anonymous sources, they're indicating that Fitbit is buying the smartwatch maker for about $34 to $40 million. And all this is due to Pebble having a whole lot of financial issues. Apparently, they owe their lenders about $25 million and have been looking to sell themselves for quite some time now. This is very interesting news in the sense that Pebble was basically one of the first large, mass popular smartwatches out on the market.
Yeah.
And here they are basically in dire straits looking to sell themselves.
And it sort of makes sense. I mean, it's the Pebble anything. They're not bad products at all. In fact, Brian, one of our friends, has one and he loves it. And it's just, they're not bad products, but I think this makes total sense for Fitbit to just kind of grab them up. That's one less competitor, you know?
It is, but at the same time, isn't it kind of sad, though, that the fact that most likely Fitbit is going to buy Pebble and not really do anything with Pebble? It's just basically taking them, buying them, and
that's the end of Pebble. The only reason to get them is just to eliminate competition, but...
And like you said, I mean, Pebble has some decent products. It's not like it's a bad product or anything. It's just, it's such a hard market to be in.
And I'm sure if they weren't in so much debt that they probably wouldn't take this deal, but I think they have limited choices at this point.
Yeah, so earlier this year, back in, I believe it was March, they laid off about 25% of its workforce. So,
wow.
I think that's kind of telling the fact that they've laid off so many people and the fact that they have $25 million in debt that they need to pay off. It's this or either way, it sounds like basically this is the end of Pebble.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't see that. Do you see them once this deal is finalized? Do you see them sticking around? Do you think Fitbit's going to keep the brand name at all or just get rid of them completely?
It's such a tough market because nobody really knows where it's heading. It's still such a very young market for smartwatches.
Yeah.
Is that I think Fitbit might take a few things from Pebble, but in large part, I don't think Pebble is going to integrate anything into Fitbit.
I would see them completely killing the brand name because, I mean, in this market of wearables, every product is sort of similar. They sort of all do the same thing, so it makes sense to just... try to push a brand name instead of like the products themselves. So it makes sense if they just completely get rid of Pebble and just they really push the branding of Fitbit.
Yeah, it's sad. So let's move on to some other news because I think we talked that one to death. There's not a whole lot there to talk about. It's just sad, you know? It's sad when these companies end up having to have these situations. Netflix is finally adding offline playback.
Which is awesome.
This is something that a lot of people have been asking for a long time now, is for some way to download videos from Netflix, especially when you're mobile. And now they're finally adding that feature. It's arrived already for most people. So it's an app update for iOS and Android. And it's pretty straightforward. When a show or movie is available to save offline, you'll see a little download button. And Netflix notes that many of its big shows, including Orange is the New Black, Narcos, and The Crown, are available to download today. And also, it's not just the Netflix shows that you get access to download. You can also download a bunch of NBC shows, including Parks and Recreation, The Office, and 30 Rock are available, including some movies such as Boyhood, Dazed and Confused, and Minions, including many others. Like I said, you know, Netflix has a very large catalog, so we don't know everything that's available to download, but it sounds like there's a good mix of stuff that's available to download for offline viewing.
Right. I mean, the issue is, and with a lot of streaming companies wanting to do offline playback, it was never an issue of they don't want to do it. It's the actual content holders that hold the rights, for whatever mm-hmm. reason, have a problem with offline viewing. There was a problem mostly, like even Hulu had that problem when they wanted to go ad-free. There's still some shows with Hulu that just aren't ad-free, regardless of what platform you're actually paying for or what tier you're paying for with Hulu, because the content holders they're just anal about that sort of thing. So at first I heard reports that it was just Netflix originals, which is cool enough, but it is cool to see some like other shows as well. Specifically for like flights, if I'm on a flight and stuff, I'm always trying to download podcasts, or now I have YouTube Red so I can download YouTube videos, but it sounds mm-hmm. even better if I'm going to be able to download The Office and watch that on a plane.
Right, and I think this is something that definitely benefits users, and I understand the fact that copyright holders want to, you know, hold on to their content, but at the same time, there needs to be this way for people to access this content in situations where they're not available online, such as, like right. you said, if you're on an airplane.
Yep.
So that's
totally
very interesting that they're doing this.
I don't see anything bad about this feature at all.
No, not at all. I was reading, though, that it's not available for every device. There are certain devices that it's not compatible with. Basically, Netflix does have a list of compatible devices, and apparently it has to be HD ready for this feature to be available on your device. So according to the list, not every device is compatible is listed, and not every device that isn't compatible is listed.
So you must not be downloading – you must only be getting one source file instead of being able to choose the resolution of your offline playback, I'm assuming? You're just
something
getting
like
one
that, yeah.
file from them? Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
But that seems to be the only downside to this is the fact that it's not available on every device, which I don't think is a huge deal. And in the fact that they've actually included other stuff besides original content is a huge step forward. And the fact that they're able to do this is just remarkable, and especially now that it's something that people have been asking for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we can thank Amazon Prime for doing this, because they started this whole offline playback thing first, and I think put a little bit of pressure on Netflix.
It just kind of makes sense that there you would have this feature in certain situations. It makes perfect sense for people that actually use Netflix to have this sort of feature available, I think.
Right.
So there's some other Netflix news here that's pretty cool. We finally got a taste of White Rabbit Project, which is basically a Mythbusters 2.0 kind of project. It's basically the continuation. It has the show stars of Mythbusters, Carrie Byron, Tori Belleci, and Grant Imahara. If you're familiar with Mythbusters, you know those names. You know what they were doing. And Mythbusters is an awesome show that recently ended. And it looks like this White Rabbit Project is coming up pretty soon. It's set to premiere on Netflix on December 9th, and this time around, Byron, Belleci, and Imahara aren't just investigating strange scientific phenomena or seemingly impossible movie scenes. They're actually ranking history's weirdest inventions, heists, and happenings, and seeing how science makes them possible. I don't know if you watched the trailer to this, but very much screams Mythbusters, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever, considering the success that MythBusters had, and the fact that I think this is a perfect venue for a MythBusters type of show. It might not be, you know, something that was successful nowadays on Discovery Channel, but it makes perfect sense for Netflix to do this type of series.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes total sense. I think that for a while, everyone, not even just watching MythBusters, but making MythBusters, was really burnt out on it, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw that the Grant and Tori and who's the other one?
Carrie,
yeah. They had trouble negotiating their contracts, and then they were let go from MythBusters. So it was just Adam and Jamie for the last season or two. And I think this reboot makes total sense coming to Netflix. I'm all for it. I love MythBusters in general, and even Adam is still around. He's focusing more on internet stuff. Like he's starting a new live show called Brain Candy with Vsauce. Michael, at least, from Vsauce.
But that's what I'm saying. I think the internet and Netflix are perfect venues for this sort of content now. It was great to have it on Discovery, to have it launched like that, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But now the internet has progressed to a point where, you know, that high quality content is available and able to be produced exclusively for the internet now. And in some ways is a better fit for the internet than it is for a cable network like Discovery.
Yeah. And props to Netflix for recognizing that there's like still demand for this. I mean, this is a great opportunity for them too.
Well, who doesn't like a good explosion?
Are you segueing?
No.
I thought you were segueing into the next story. So I was like, okay, what's the next one?
No, I'm just arguing back to one of the staples of MythBusters is explosions. Yeah. Just and who doesn't love a good explosion?
Right. Anything
I think
involving fire.
MythBusters, it needed to be rebooted in the way that it's being rebooted now. I think that makes perfect sense. It's just one of those shows that got so big over time that it had to be rebooted, I think.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I'm very interested to see how the show does. And I'm definitely going to watch this December 9th when it premieres. The question is whether or not they're going to, you know, have the entire series available all at once, or if this is something they're going to release episode by episode.
I would think all at once. That's just Netflix's. Netflix's.
Netflix
Eye? Netflix's. That's just Netflix's style. I'm pretty sure like the heads of Netflix have been like actually on record and have mentioned that they love giving the consumer that choice, and so I would see it coming all at once.
Speaking of giving consumers a choice, we actually have a new choice. DirecTV Now, something that we've known about for a while now, is finally available. It launched, I believe, 2 days ago, November 30th. Yeah, that was 2 days ago, which is basically a competitor to Sling TV and the PlayStation View. We knew about this all the way back in March, but now we finally got the information about this. It'll start with a package of $35 for 60 channels. And as a promotion, early adopters will be able to lock in 100 channels for that price, which normally costs around $60 a month. In comparison, the View starts at $30 a month with around 45 channels, and Sling TV starts at $20 per month with fewer networks. As for other packages, you can get 80 channels for $50 a month and more, and $120 channels for $70 a month. You'll be able to view the service on your Apple TV, your Fire TV devices, iOS, Android, Internet Explorer, Chrome, Safari. Basically, just, you know, what you would expect from a service like this. This is pretty cool that they're doing this. What do you think about this new service from AT&T?
Oh, I'm all for it. Like, this is, and I think I mentioned this before on my show, maybe a couple episodes ago, that it's very rare that these companies understand where consumers are headed. Specifically, anything related to cable television is so dated and outmoded at this point, like just their mindset. And it's really cool for AT&T because they didn't they have acquired themselves into this sort of thing. So it's like they already had an understanding and they had a plan going into this. They know we're moving mobile first. They know people are cutting the cord. It's just fact. That's what's happening. People want to watch what they want to watch whenever on whatever device they want. It makes total sense. And AT&T is giving them so many different options. And the best part about it is now they have full control over every single one of those options. So it doesn't matter if consumers want cable television because now you can get that with AT&T. It doesn't matter if you want to cut the cord because now you can get that with AT&T.
What do you think about the pricing for the packages?
I think it makes sense. Especially like the starting price, that promotion for 100 channels for $35. And I think you can get like HBO and stuff for $5 extra, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, I haven't looked specifically at all the other packages. But yeah, from what I understand, you can add all those other packages, HBO, Showtime, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Plus, if you have AT&T as your mobile carrier, another market that they have on lock, that doesn't cost anything regarding data. It's completely free for you if you're using AT&T. So if you want to watch stuff with DirecTV Now, it won't count against your data at all.
This stuff is so interesting to me because I'm somewhat of a semi-cord cutter in the sense that there's a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily watch on TV, but then there's stuff that I do watch on TV because I can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah.
So I still have cable because those shows aren't available really online unless, you know, I DVR it. Which, right. Strangely, the fact that there's still shows that you can only get if you DVR it, which I don't understand. But this is great that there's another option. And I actually tried this out today. It's interesting. And I've tried a few of these services out.
You bought it?
I did not buy it. No, I borrowed it. I borrowed it to do a demo because Andrew has this. So I borrowed his login to test this out just so that I had some firsthand information about how well this service works. And it's very interesting. Yeah. It works fairly well. It's not 100% perfect, which I don't think is a realistic expectation at this point because it did just launch. So there's obviously going to be some, you know, technical issues here and there. It's not going to work perfectly, which is kind of indicative of these over-the-top TV services such as Sling TV and DirecTV Now. But right. It works remarkably well, and the picture quality is actually very good. It's not necessarily as good as what you would see on your cable TV. However, I believe it's good enough that most people don't care. As long as it looks good, and most content is about 720p, you know, around 4 or 5 megabits per second, which is much better than what I experienced when I tried Sling TV. And when I tried Sling TV, nope.
Yeah.
Just didn't like it whatsoever. I didn't like the interface. I didn't like how it worked. And most of all, I just didn't like the quality that I got with Sling TV
for a week. And I was like, all right, well, this is
terrible. It was like 1.5 megabits at 720p, if that.
Right.
And it just looked terrible. Like, there's no way I would pay money for Sling TV.
This starting promotion, $35 for 100 channels, is a great deal.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's totally watchable. There's a lot of, you know, over-the-top services out there now and, you know, a lot of online TV. And really what it comes down to for me is the picture quality. And that's something that's very hard to do. I mean, Netflix has this unlock. Amazon Prime has it unlock. YouTube has it unlock. But a lot of these online TV services don't seem to be able to deliver on, you know, high quality picture, especially when doing it live. And I think DirecTV Now is close enough that you could realistically cut the cord and have, you know, DirecTV Now in its place and not have to worry about picture quality. That's just something that I'm very much into.
I think the lack of quality is just a side effect of these companies not understanding what the right move is. They're only doing it because it's like a last-ditch effort because people are cutting the cord. So they're like, oh, we got to give them an option, or we need to capitalize on this market right now before they truly understand how to do it properly.
Well, it's interesting because I think you've tried this too. The NFL is doing live streams on Twitter now,
and
or has done a few Twitter streams. Have you actually watched any of these NFL games when they were being streamed on Twitter?
Yeah, I saw a couple of them. Not to watch them because they're NFL games. I just wanted to see it because it was part of the news, and they looked incredible. All the streams that I've seen on Twitter were great.
Yeah, and that's just that's incredible. The fact that Twitter gets this so right. Yes, it's sport. It might not be 60 frames per second. It might miss the mark for sports fanatics. For somebody who just wants high quality picture at 1080p on their device, Twitter freaking nailed it. Nailed it. And I was like blown away by the picture quality of what the NFL streamed on Twitter. I don't think DirecTV Now has as high of a quality. They might be ramping it up later. They said that it might start doing 1080p and 4K later. But I'll tell you what, I'm very impressed right now with DirecTV Now.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested in this, like, now's the time to do it, especially with the early promotion and everything.
Yeah, you can lock in that $35 price for 100 channels, and at that price, it makes perfect sense to do this if you're a cord cutter and you just want some sort of live TV, and you still get access to a lot of on-demand stuff through them as well, which is really nice. So it's not just live TV. It's all these things that you're getting for $35 per month. You're basically getting live TV plus Hulu and of sorts built into that, which I think is a pretty good deal.
Yep.
So let's move on to some other information. CNN has snapped up Casey Neistat's video sharing app called Beam. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, I think I watched your video and that's how it's pronounced, which I see it as Beamy, but I don't know. That's just dumb. So CNN has acquired the social video sharing app Beam, which I want to say Beamy still, but which is basically the brainchild of YouTube star Casey Neistat. And why don't you go on to this, because you're more familiar with this side of things.
Right. So Casey's been on the web for a while. He's been creating like what he calls movies for a while, and he's done a project for HBO. He's been in filmmaking forever. He started a vlog to basically introduce and talk about his new company, which was Beam at the time. So he started it like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago maybe. And it's essentially just an app, and it's for iOS and Android, where instead of holding the camera up in front of your face and missing whatever moment you're involved in, you just hold it to your chest. It beeps and records 10 seconds or a few seconds of whatever's in front of you. And
I think it's like 4 seconds.
It. Yeah, and then it instantly shares it. And then people follow you on Beam. You follow other people on Beam. And that's how it works. And initially, the launch was super successful. And that's just because it was Casey. And so, obviously, when he announced the launch and everything, people were all over it. They were using it. But its feature set is not... It's not great. It's the same thing all the time, just holding it up, that sort of thing. Other platforms have surpassed it by a lot. I mean, Snapchat, Instagram now doing what they're doing with like live interacting with videos and stuff. It's even Facebook. Everything is it's different now from when Beam first started, and Beam just didn't adapt, and it just tapered off, and no one really uses it anymore. So this was not CNN getting Beam. In fact, they're shutting Beam down. They wanted Casey. Yeah, they're going to take. If you go to Beam's website, I think it's beamapp.com or something. It has a shutdown notice. They're shutting the app down. That's CNN's plan. They want to shut it down, and all they wanted was Casey and the 11-person team, the Beam team, and they're essentially just going to use those people to create a standalone media company for CNN. So it's umbrellaed by CNN. It's not technically going to be – it's not an app. Like, people are like, oh, he's going to create an app for CNN. That's not what's happening. It's like a full-on standalone media thing. So even Casey said he doesn't know exactly what they're doing with it yet. This is just a very, like, initial thing. They sold Beam. They're going to shut
Beam down.
So
he saw the money and he couldn't refuse.
Yeah. And then whatever happens after that is just – because there was a lot of investors in Beam. They raised millions of dollars for Beam through investors, and this was the only option. It wasn't – unless they introduced some crazy new features, it just can't compete. So the only way to really not screw over all those investors was to take this and then move on to something else.
How much did they end up paying for Beam?
Most reports are $25 million.
Wow, that's a lot of freaking money.
Yeah.
So
and there's 11 people in the team. Plus, I'm sure they had to pay back investors. So who knows how much they're actually walking away with. The main thing, though, is that it's not just a one and done sort of thing. Like, he works for CNN now.
Yeah, but that's still a crazy amount of money to buy for an app that really wasn't all that popular to begin with.
Exactly.
I mean, yes, I understand that. I understand that they're doing this to get Casey, but
yeah, the app is not worth $25 million. They wanted Casey, and I'm sure that's just how it was negotiated. Like, okay, well then make this app go away for me, basically. But like he just ended his daily vlog. That was a big deal. And throughout the vlog, he kept saying there's something happening right now that I can't talk about. And then he ended the vlog, and this is directly related. So if you want to say he sold out, that's an option. But either way, this is what he's going to do now. So,
well, in a technical sense, I could understand that because, you know, he is now doing CNN, which is cable news, instead of the internet.
Yeah.
Or is technically, you know, a traditional cable network versus, yeah, you know, the new media, which is internet. But I can understand that. But at the same time, that's a lot of freaking money.
Yeah, Casey has quite the audience. So I think they're trying to, like, merge that and make CNN relevant.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, most media these days have kind of screwed themselves with the way that they've
mostly CNN too. So
yes,
but it's crazy because I guarantee that Casey on a daily basis probably got more views than anything on CNN. That dude was pulling like 3 million views of vlog.
I could see that.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to acquire Front Page Tech, shut it down just for John Prosser, what kind of money are we talking about here?
I'll do it for like $100 and a taco.
A pepperoni roll?
Yeah, that's even better, dude. I'll do it for
that. So we've got one last story here to go through. This is kind of a scary one. So San Francisco had a pretty big problem over Thanksgiving. The city's municipal transportation agency confirmed that the Muni Station computer system was hacked, leading officials to open fare gates, shut down ticket kiosk, and otherwise make rides free on November 26. Now, trains themselves were unaffected, and payments resumed the following morning of the 27th. However, this is a very interesting situation because it looks like there was a hacker that went by the pseudonym of Andy Solis, or Solis, and they basically put ransomware on the city's payment system, providing that they wanted basically what it said is that these screens now said you've been hacked, send, you know, this amount, $73,000 in Bitcoin to, you know, this address. This is very interesting that they were doing this, and that basically what ended up happening is the city paid $73,000 in Bitcoin to get their system and data back.
Oh man, what?
So this is a very serious problem. This is not the first time we've seen this happen now. You know, earlier this year there was a hospital system that had ransomware and had their entire systems encrypted, and the only way to, you know, resume operations was for them to actually pay, you know, whatever it is that the hackers wanted in Bitcoin. And now here we are, you know, while it wasn't the train themselves, it was a very, you know, technical system that hackers were able to breach and hold for ransom.
What a time to be alive.
I mean, what do you think about this?
We live in the future. It's just like, and you remember when we had that massive DDoS attack a couple months ago that like took down the whole internet? They also targeted Washington, D.C. and shut down like all digital payments in Washington, D.C. Like that whole day, you couldn't use a debit card. That's enough to wreck your day a good amount.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty scary stuff. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, what has been hacked hasn't been necessarily life-threatening in the sense that, you know, the power grid didn't go down, you know, something like that, a nuclear power plant didn't go offline and melt down. However, this doesn't bode well for situations like that where, you know, these systems that are supposed to be secure and guarded have been hacked very easily.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a stretch at this point to think, you know, in the future, in the near future, something worse, including our power grid, could be easily hacked and held for a ransom. That's just incredible.
Which would be terrible.
Yes, that would be terrible. Yes.
That'd be so bad.
Do you think there's any way to defend against this? I mean, do we need to have more secure systems, or is it just that we're so stupid when it comes to security that, you know, social engineering can just completely wreck any security that there is?
Well, the sad thing is I don't think we can defend ourselves until it happens to us, like until we learn how it happened. And after that, it's already happened and we've already been screwed once. So, I don't know.
But this has been happening for years now. It's just gotten to the point where we're seeing these large companies and governments that are being held for ransom now. We saw that hospital system. Now we've seen this municipal system. We've seen large breaches of payment systems that were hacked. And it doesn't seem like we're learning anything from these hacks.
No, because unfortunately it's on an individual basis. There's not a one-size-fits-all here. It's how do you guard yourselves individually for any attack like this? Because everyone's going to be attacked differently for different reasons, and that's just the scary part.
Should we have the NSA drop guidelines or something for these other governments and other systems that they should follow to secure their systems? I mean, what about social engineering? I mean, I think the biggest problem today is that, you know, and this probably happened because somebody, you know, was on the company computer, on the government computer, got an email, opened it up in their Gmail. It was phishing link. They opened it,
really
downloaded the you know, ransomware, and then now the whole system is down.
Yep.
All thanks to somebody that opened Gmail on a government computer.
Yep. I mean, it's crazy because these people, these hackers, obviously are one step ahead of everybody else. So it seems like we're just going to have to learn from experience. And unfortunately, that means getting hacked. So that sucks.
I don't think we're learning here. I really don't. The fact that this keeps happening multiple times and that is still profitable, it's almost like we need a government or the NSA or somebody to step in and say, okay, this stuff needs to be secured, and it needs to be secured right. You people need to learn about phishing and not clicking stupid links in your email.
Well, here's the thing. The people that are in charge of this sort of stuff, or would be in charge of this sort of stuff, don't fully understand it. Like, they don't understand the age we're living in. And that's going to be a problem for a few years. They're just older. The lack of experience in this sort of thing, it's just a lack of understanding. And until we have people
What you're saying is the government should hire you to protect the defense system.
Say what?
So what you're saying is the government should hire you to protect everything.
No, don't hire me. Do not. This will be much worse if I'm in charge. Just a heads up.
That would be scary.
Talk about the power grid going down. That's when it's going to happen, the second I'm hired.
It'll be you clicking on a link for a kazoo.
I know. It'll be me just being like, hey, here's a free ice cream cone. And I'm like, sure, I'll click this link. Here's all my passwords.
Well, that's pretty much all the news that we've got for today. Is there anything else you wanted to cover that you knew about that happened this week that you wanted to get to?
Nope.
No? Nothing?
That's all. That's all.
Okay. So where can people find more about you and what you do?
YouTube.com/FrontPageTech or Twitter.com/FrontPageTech or just Google FrontPageTech.
And I see you got a fancy new FPT shirt that you're wearing there.
I do. It says Tech News and Fart Jokes.
So are people going to be able to, you know, get that soon?
Yeah. Yeah, probably this month, actually.
Awesome. So it'll be something for Christmas that you can get people.
That's the goal.
Awesome. So, you know, you can find me here, of course, on the GFQ Network, where we do Tech News Weekly, a whole bunch of other shows. You can also follow me on Twitter at Suncast. Make sure you follow this guy on Twitter as well. He's at John underscore Prosser, which is pretty cool. Frontpagetech.net. And, you know, I know you guys are buying stuff on Amazon. You guys buy stuff on Amazon all the time. Yeah. So we have this cool little affiliate link that anytime you make a purchase on Amazon, we get a little percentage of that sale, and it really does help us out. We've got a whole bunch of equipment here back at GFQ that we have to maintain and, you know, buy new stuff for, and just, you know, after a while, the stuff just needs to be replaced. We got to get new computers, new hardware, and all sorts of stuff. So anytime that you buy something on Amazon, you should use our link. Just go to gfq.co/Amazon. They'll grab our affiliate link, and then next time you buy something, we'll get a nice little percentage of that sale. So if you can do that, that would be just peachy. And I think that does it for us.
Just peachy.
Peachy, yes. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Have a good one.